Rabbi, we spoke about how Rav Dessler being involved in founding the Gateshead Kollel, and he mentioned that he really undertook the responsibilities by himself fully, and although that he was in frail health, nevertheless he undertook that very, very grueling schedule throughout the war years. It is said that his type of schedule would have destroyed someone who is much younger than he was. For example, something we might have mentioned is that every week he had to basically achieve three objectives. He says, from the beginning, because remember, he made a condition that he'll only accept spearheading the Kollel and being involved in the Kollel. He said, the understanding that he would still continue teaching his private Talmidim that he had in the London area, which meant that from Gateshead, he'd continuously have to travel back to London. Also, he refused to take any money personally for himself. He was the one who raised all the money for the Kollel. Didn't take anything for himself, and therefore it was only the private Talmidim that he had that was really his only source of income. And number two, in addition to the private Talmidim that he had, he also continued to give public shiurim, and also to meet with groups of close Talmidim in London, also in Chesham, which also in England, and also Manchester. In addition to all that, he also used to find time to prepare a weekly shmuz for the Kollel, and also a public shmuz in Gateshead. And in the early years of the Kollel, he also took his turn delivering a chabura, which was a lamda shishir on the mesechta that the Kollel was learning. So it was an all-encompassing person delivering shiurim, certainly in Musar, all over, and as well as also giving a lamda shishir. And finally, in addition to all the shmuz and all the different types of shiurim that he gave, he had to raise the entire week's budget, you know, for the Kollel, which basically, after a while, exceeded more than £100 a week, which for then was a lot of money. And one of the basic principles that he had basically set aside from the beginning with the Kollel was that the Kollel should never incur any debts, meaning that the stipend should always be paid on time. He was very makpid on that. But the stipend that were given to the Kollel students should be given on time. And somehow he was able to fulfill, he says, the conditions, even though at the beginning of each week we said he never knew how he was going to have the money. But it always just worked out that way, that by the end of the week or the end of the month, he managed to come up with the money that had to be given. And to be able to keep his commitment to see to it that all the stipends really are paid on time. The truth is that the very difficult schedule was basically because of the demands, you know, that were necessary, the overwhelming demands of his time. But on an aside, he seemed to, in a certain sense, also felt that he could identify with that very, very difficult schedule during the war years, because one of the main things that, you know, in Musar, which all the Bala Musar talk about, Chofetz Chaim himself, which is not primarily a Bala Musar in the sense of giving Musar Shemusim, which although the Chofetz Chaim is filled with Divrei Musar. The idea of being a Noise Boil Chaveira, that someone should be able to be Mishtatev in the Tzar of someone else, and not only just to lend a shoulder, but in a certain sense, really to feel the pain as much as is possible, and the pain of someone else. And Rav Dessler took it very seriously. During the war years, he understood that there's a suffering of so many Jews. So first of all, the fact that he had this difficult schedule, which was on his time, demanding so much of his time, and therefore taking such a toll on his health, he sort of took it in a certain way, that as a side benefit in a certain sense, but nobody wants to say, of course, that it should affect his health, but in a certain sense that he's also in his contributing in a certain, the tsar that the people are feeling in the war, but at least they also, he's not having it so easy, and he's not living a comfortable life. As a matter of fact, he used to say many times, he says, my brother sleep on the ground, he said, and therefore, this is a response to why he's driving himself so much. Well, he says, if people have to sleep on the ground in the war times, they don't have a bed to sleep on, so at least he said, I can do a little bit more, he says, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though it means driving myself back a really more. So at least I also am not going to be in a state of comfort. Rav Moshe Schneider is, you know, a very famous person, you know, the Rosh Yeshiva in London, England, one of the many, many Choshev Talmidim was Gaon Moshe Sternberg, was also Talmud of the Schneider's Yeshiva. Himself was a well-known tzaddik, Rav Moshe Schneider, Choshev Bal Musar, and so on. So Rav Moshe Schneider once told his Talmidim that throughout the war, he says, throughout the war years, so Rav Dessler did not undress or take off his shoes when he went to sleep. Atkedei kach. Ad kadei kach was his noisa be'el chaveira being mishtatif, and nor did he purchase any new clothing during the war years on account of that situation. It is said that it's very hard to imagine anybody else that would be less suited to be a fundraiser than Rav Dessler. It was not part of his nature at all. And besides his poor health, by nature he was a shy person and he was a reserved person. And therefore, it was totally out of character for something that he undertook. And that's why it makes it so interesting that as difficult as fundraising was for him, he did not spare himself, he says, when the cause was one in which he believed in. So whatever his natural personality would have been, he did what he believed is the right thing to do, and that's what he would do. As a matter of fact, it is said that when he was a rabbi in a place in England, a place called Dalston, they say that on every Thursday night, he would go out to collect for poor families of the shul. Again, something was basically against his nature, but he did it because he believed it was something that was important. As a matter of fact, the fundraising itself for the Kollel in Gateshead was something that was filled with constant humiliation. Why? Because at that time, you have to realize, in those years, there was no appreciation of the value of a Kollel. There's no appreciation. Let them go out to work. So there was no appreciation, you can imagine. So trying to raise money for such a cause was not an easy task at all. And therefore, as mentioned, it was filled with humiliation. And almost the entire funding of the Kollel was based upon gifts of £5 or less, which was solicited from door to door. That's the way it was. Small donations, just accumulated one after the other. And Rav Dessler used to say, very much in humility and in modesty, says, well, he says, these humiliations of fundraising, he says, make it more bearable for me. As he once told to a Yid known Rav Zisha Waltner, he said to him, he said, because it's impossible to throw me down, because I don't climb high. So he says, so being kind of a person, so he says, so it's quite okay, he says. Can never hurt all that much, he says, by nature. As mentioned, as he says, he never missed the payroll, which was very interesting. And Rav Dessler would not attribute it to his own success as a fundraiser, the fact that he was able always to meet the payroll. He would always say that that's a sign min Shemayim, that Shemayim approved on his activities that he's doing on behalf of the Kollel. So quickly, it was the Siyata Shemayim. He did whatever shtadlus he did, even though it was with a lot of effort, but he did not take the credit that it was his success as a fundraiser, but rather this was a sign min Shemayim approving of the activities. As a matter of fact, it's something that he said in one of his talks, which is something very, very fascinating, and it's actually printed Michtav and Leo. Actually, on page 151, it's quite a little bit of the head where we're up to now. But Rav Dessler says the following. He writes, and he said in a shmuz, write this, what the schus of the klal means. If somebody's working on behalf of the klal, you have no idea what the schus of the klal does for you. And he says as follows, this is the way it's written. He says that you can have a community, says Rav Dessler, which is in dire need, let's say, of a person to come to its rescue, or to help in some other way, maybe material or spiritual. And yet there's no one at hand who is really suited for the task. So here you have a community that needs help. It needs aid, either spiritually or maybe financially, material. But Lamaisa, there's nobody really that's suited to do the task. Says Rav Dessler, we find that Hashem will shower, he says, heavenly aid, right, in extraordinary measure upon anyone who volunteers, even though he's not suited. Why? Because the schus of the Rabban. So it means to say that many times people shy away when it comes to do something which the Rabban needs. He says, I'm not the right person for it. It's not me. He says, I'm not suited for this kind of situation. That itself, Rabbi, you say, you don't have to be suited for it, because the schus of the Rabban itself is something that will promote you and will give you much more talents and ability in the area than one can imagine naturally, which you may not have. And that's what he points out over there. He says, though the person is not suitable, he'll be made suitable. And then he writes, what brought this amazing change? The schus of the community, he says, matter of fact, which needs him. So the same thing he said about himself. I'm not a successful fundraiser, it's not me. He says, the fact that he was able, he says, to meet the payroll that he committed himself for was based upon, he said, the schus of Rabbim. Shemayim is maskim to the activities that he's doing. The physical and emotional drain from the non-stop schedule of teaching and the fundraising, exacted a very heavy toll. And he once said, you know, Mark Miller, you know, is the author of this farm, you know, if you ever seen Shabbos Shurim, he's a Shurim Rod Miller, Gateshead Girls School, very big, Zechon L'Rochas, Shtakim Bal Machshove. There's a number of volumes. It's basically on the teaching of Rav Dessler, you know, and Rabbi Yeruchim, Rabbi Simcha Zissel, all of the classical Musa Sfarim. So Mark Miller also was the Talmud of Rav Dessler. So he says that, so he said, Rav Dessler used to say many times, I've given up my health and my neshama to undertake, he says, this task without any help from others, solely myself. And he was doing it. As a matter of fact, as much as the physical pressures, you know, that were upon him and drained him, Rav Dessler said that was not what bothered him the most. It's not the physical drain, he says, that bothered him. You know what bothered him most? He used to say is because Chazal say, and Rashi brings it in Pashas Lech Lecho, Lech Lecho, Me'artzecho, Me'latcho, Lorz Asherecho, and because he broke the promises of Rav Avinu, a lot of Havtochas, Ve'eschol, Goy Godel, right? As it says there, and Rashi says, Lefisha HaDerech, one of the things is Me'matis Es Hashem. But that cloud, we say that means that when somebody travels, basically, so his good name, he's moves on from place to place, so therefore it takes away one's good name because he doesn't have really much time to establish a good name because he's always on the go. That's a simple pshat. That Haderech is Mamayit Es Hashem. Rav Dessler had a different interpretation. Shem, he says, the name of a person, that really means his spiritual standing. That is his name. Lefisha Haderech Mamatis Es Hashem means when somebody is always on traveling, he has no time to work on a spiritual level. Rav Dessler felt very much the loss of his own spiritual madrega as a consequence of being traveling so much. He said, that's what he's giving up. And Ben Lamaisa had no regrets, because he says, if you have to sacrifice something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more than sacrificing your physical, more than sacrificing your material, your money, the greatest sacrifice is you're giving up your spirituality that you could have reached, but I'm giving it up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're giving up some ruchnis for the sake of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the highest level of sacrifice. And he, in his humility, felt that he's losing out on the ability of growing spiritually, or growing more spiritually, through the fact that he was always busy traveling. As you say, Haderech Mamaitis Hashem, if a person travels, then one is not able to grow in his ruchnias. Now, they used to say, you know, when somebody travels, you know, the Torah refers to it, Navanad. Navanad. Navanad, how's it spelled? Nun Ayin, Nun Dalad, right? Navanad. He's on the move. Magzut of Yiddish, what's Navanad? Rosh Hashanah is Nishtes and Nishdavan. So that's what happens. For he's always on the move, right? You can't daven properly. You have a train to catch, a bus to catch. Here you can't eat. You're not at home. You don't have the discipline that you normally one has. So that's what happens. Well, that's just said it literally on himself also. Okay, well, that's what he said. But actually, in another Shemus, the truth is also Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, when a person is ready to sacrifice, he says, one's ruchnius on behalf of the klal, the end of the day he's not going to lose, because Baruch Hu is going to pay him back, and he'll be able to achieve in much shorter time, right, that which would have normally needed much more time. So even though he gave up a lot of his time, right, which he could have used for himself, but he's not going to lose it, because the Baruch Hu is going to pay him back. The Rav Dessler has it in one of the Shmuzen, actually also Mitzvah Leo, also he said in the first volume, discussing that situation. I just want to mention that the Ponovich Rav, which mentioned, you know, when he gave away so much time in building Yeshivas Ponovich, used to say, he says, people talk about when you sacrifice, right, when you sacrifice, they talk about, they call it Mesiras Nefesh. Mesiras Nefesh. Right, if somebody, that's the ultimate sacrifice that we think of. That's exactly somebody, right, somebody so dedicated and committed to be Mekadeshim Shemayim that he gives up his life, right, to die al Kiddush Hashem. Okay, that's called Mesiras Nefesh, right? He gave up his life. Mommy, she's Moshe Nefesh. Ponovich Rav, used to say, also Rav Levenberg, you know, of New Haven, Connecticut, they both said it. He said, that's not called Mesiras Nefesh, that's called Mesiras Aguf. You know what Mesiras Nefesh is? When you're alive. And instead of sitting and learning, he says, Rav Levenberg used to say, I could have been sitting at home, I could have learned Shas 7 times over, but I gave up all the learning that I could have done in order to be Marbis Torah for the sake of the yeshiva. Going around collecting food from the farmers, collecting bread, that's what he used to do. He used to go soliciting. They said, so that's called Mesiras Nefesh. I gave up Nefesh, I gave up my Neshama. People who die at the stake, that's Mesiras Aguf, that's not Mesiras Neshama. That's Mesiras Aguf, not Moshe Nefesh. Moshe Nefesh is when you're alive, but you're giving up your ruchnis, giving up your neshama. And that's what I did, he said. I gave up my nefesh. He said, Ponovich Rav said the same thing. He also said, Rav Levenberg said the same thing. All right, Rav Oysha, let's go and take a look here. We move here. The essay that we're going to do now is on page 61, on the bottom, called Koichos Shel Mabat HaEmes. page 61. Koichoi shel mabat ha'emes. Which basically means the power of truth perspective. The power of truth perspective. Koichoi shel mabat ha'emes. Basically, what Rav Dessa is addressing himself here is being that the fact that was already mentioned many, many times, which means that if a person has a personal negi, if a person has a bias, it clouds his thinking. Therefore, he's not able to think clearly or objectively, because his personal negi and bias will channel his train of thought in a way that will benefit him. That is just the natural order of things. So Rav Dessa said, if that's the case, then there should never be an ability to think objectively, because whenever we take on a task of something, we have an interest in it. And whenever we take on a task and we have an interest in it, it would seem that we have a particular interest, and that interest that we have, should it then not always, therefore, channel our mode of thinking in that direction that we have an interest in? So how can anyone ever think objectively? Because it seems that we would always have a bias in every situation. We would like it to be better one way or the other. So how are we ever able to think something through clearly? So how do we have a truth perspective? And he goes on to say as follows. Kasavnu, we already wrote, b'maymer lo nifleisiv lo rechoiko. There's an article that talks about it's not hidden from you, it's not distant from you. That was an article, that was the title of the article. And there we said the following. And we raised the question. And the question was that, ma'achar, he said, shashoichet yavar ein chachomim. Being that shoichat, being that bribery blinds the eyes of chachomim. And we have a rule, ein odem roye choiv liatzmai. Nobody really recognizes his own faults. He always finds answers, he always finds a way to explain away. That's a cloud. The person does not see somebody else's faults. No one sees, he does the exact same thing, he doesn't see his own faults. So the question is, why? Because he's a negei bedover. Because regarding himself, he's always a negei bedover, and if he's a negei bedover, he's not able to see. He's not able to see the truth. If so, the question is, being that a negei bedover does not see the truth, eich efsher hu shenavchin es ha'emes. The question basically is, then how can one ever be able to discern the truth? The fact is that always, right, we always have a negiah of some sort. And therefore Rav Dessler says something very most interesting. He says, the answer to that is, she'ein ha'negiah mechasa legamre so'emes. Rav Dessler says, we have to come to a conclusion that a negiah, a bias, does not totally, completely cover the truth. It makes the truth be very clouded. It makes it be, right? It makes it be covered, but does not make it impossible. Which means, he says, kigam, because achrei ashi yifata hayetzer sodom loymar, because even when the Yetzer Hara, he says, even when the Yetzer Hara really comes and tries to persuade a person, to tell him, shigam derech hasheker embassy. Because even after the Yetzer Hara, right? Yetzer Hara tries to fool him. The Yetzer Hara tries to trick him into saying that the Derech HaSheker is true. The truth is subconsciously, Mekol Mekim Yedeahu Be'emes, Shederech HaEmes Amitis Yoyser. The truth is that deep down, a person really knows that the real true way is the Emes, the truth. And Rav Dessler uses the Lashon, he said, we go to the next page, V'zeh Mechazdei HaBoyre Baruch Hu. This is one of the chasodim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shloi nosan reshus liyetzer lechatzis ha'semes legamre. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not give reshus to the Yetzer Hara to cover the truth completely, or else it would be impossible ever. What it means, it's only made it difficult. It made it only difficult. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not give the Yetzer Hara. So even if a person has a negiah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not allow the Yetzer Hara, right, to take advantage of that negiah that a person has to cover the truth completely, that your bechlal will not able under any circumstance to find out the truth. Even with a negiah, if you work at it hard and you plumb it to the depth, you'll still be able to find out which way is the emes lamitoi. And therefore, says Rav Dessler, a person has to concentrate on this point. A person has to concentrate on this point. A person has to continuously, right, make himself aware that the truth is the only reality, and that which pretends to resemble truth is falsehood, and it's unreal. sheker. That which only pretends to be the truth, you have to realize that in fact is sheker, shekeru, the eniklum is nothing. So what is the eitzah that in fact that a person should be zoicher? Because we're saying in a giyah, yes, it covers up, but it doesn't totally cover the truth, but makes it difficult. So what is the eitzah to be able to find that opening, to be able to see the truth when somebody has a giyah, to be able to see the real truth? Because after all, as he says, a person has to come to the realization that only the real truth is reality. Anything that merely resembles it or pretends is sheker. When it comes to truth, you know, truth has to be absolute. As somebody says, 90%, if something only 90% true, it's 100% sheker. Who said that? Rav Yitzchok Zinger, the Chacham Lubavitch, I heard him say it at a hesped. He said at a hesped many, many years ago. He said at a hesped because the Gemara discusses, it says, who is an Odom kosher? Who is an Odom kosher? The Gemara discusses regarding an Odom kosher. And so discussing what's the lashon of adam kosher, a kosher l'chayr is on an animal. It's either kosher or treifa, but you talk about a human being. Talking about a human being is what's the lashon of kosher? And he went on to point out when you talk about yashrus and talk about just like by kashrus, if an animal is only 90% kosher, that's 100% treif. The same thing when you say an adam kosher, he's 90% of the time is okay. The truth is, kosher is not kosher then. It's not the only thing is 90% be kosher. Either you're 100% kosher or you're not kosher, he says. So when we're talking about truth, truth is only the real truth is that's the metzias. Anything else that merely resembles it is totally sheker. Some that resembles truth is not partially true or a little bit true, but merely resembles or pretends to be true is totally sheker. It's totally false. So a person has to have Yir Shemayim. He says, "Bizboinen is hayiro." A person therefore has to reflect on the fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because you have to understand, the Gemara says, the Medrash says, "Choisomoish laHaKadosh Baruch Hu is emes." HaKadosh Baruch Hu's signature is true. Right? Every person has a signature, how he signs his name. What's Hashem's signature? So the Gemara says, "Choisomoish laHaKadosh Baruch Hu emes." Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's signature is true. And therefore, when we talk about fearing Hashem, fearing Hashem means to identify oneself with true values, because that's what Hashem is. Hashem stands for emes. So having fear of Hashem means that one identifies to something that's true. So if we're trying to objectively be able to find the truth, you have to therefore become a God-fearing person. You have to work on your Yerushalayim, he says. Bizboinen is hayiro. If a person really will reflect on Yerush Hashem, Yishtameish lehinotzel min hasheker, that will help him. But that will help him to spare himself and be saved from things that are untrue. Which means that when a person learns to reflect upon his affairs from this viewpoint, I have to find the real truth. Not allow to him to imagine something that's being true, but really put his mind and concentrate that he's really looking for the real truth. He says, Zehu, that's what we mean, Ashehurgalnu Likroi, that's what we mean by the term that we always say, Mabit Bemambatuemis, truth perspective. Truth perspective means where a person trains himself to really find the real truth, understanding that real truth is the only reality. Anything else that pretends to be true or seems to be true, well, it's totally false, it's totally sheker. So now Rav Dessler goes on to show how remarkable it is. He says, how remarkable it is, we're talking about truth perspective, that sometimes it's very difficult to find that truth perspective. And sometimes a person certainly can fool himself thinking. A person doesn't realize what he really believes. He thinks he believes in something, where in reality he doesn't even believe it himself, and he does not even notice it. A person can fool himself thinking he believes in something, where in reality he really does not believe it. Sometimes it's very subtle, it's very slight. And it goes on to point out something very fascinating. But that's the point side says here, I can show you something which is very remarkable. Lira is to show you at Kama Koichoi Shal Mabat Emes Magia. I want to show you, says Aldesa, to show this how far, right? To show you how far, he says, the truth perspective and the difficulty really to be able to find really the true perspective. The Kama Hodam Achroi, and also how much a person will be is responsible to find it. As Hashem will hold him accountable, did you really work on finding? He says, he may be held accountable even for the slightest mistake, because he allowed himself to be fooled. He says, why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you the ability. maybe hard, maybe difficult. Because Baruch Hu gives you the ability to find the truth. Mikivin sheyochel levaro al pi mabat wemes. Being a Baruch Hu gave you the ability to be able to be mevarer through the truth perspective. So he says, so therefore a person will be held accountable if he allows himself to be taken in. And he says, I will refer to something that I wrote. He says in a mimer called Habitochen Laishtadlis Binyan HaMeraglim. And this is what Radessa writes, a very fascinating Chazal regarding the Meraglim. It gives a little bit of a new insight in the parsha of the Meraglim. The Meraglim, of course, they were sent out as spies, right? And they came back, of course, with falsehood, right? Trying to scare the Bnei Yisrael and making them believe that it's impossible the task to be able to conquer Israel due to the fact that all of the giants and all of the insurmountable, right, the power and the strength that the people of Canaan have. So they instilled a fear, a falsehood of fear into the Bnei Yisrael. But this is the way we read it simply if we go over simple translation of the Chumash. The Yalkut Shemoni tells us the following. Zeloshna Yalkut, Reishalach. The Yalkut tells us, the Yalkut Shemoni, right, which is basically a compilation of all the Medroshim. Reb Shimon Adarshan was his name. He lived about something like 900 years old, the Machaber of the Yalkut Shemoni. Reb Shimon Adarshan, he came from Frankfurt, Germany, and basically did a lot of research in bringing together all the different Medroshim, all the different types, and he put it in one sefer. There's a Chamisha Chumashi Torah, there's also a Tanakh, all the different Chazals that he could find. That's called Yalkut Shemoni. His name was Shimon. The Yalkut Shemoni is the Likut that he collected all the different Medroshim, Medrash Tanchuma, Medrash Rabba, all the different Midrashim. So the Yalkut Shemoni brings down as follows. Omru Yisroel, he says, the Yidden came, right, and suggested to Moshe Rabbeinu, right, to send spies to Canaan. Omru Yisroel, Moshe Rabbeinu, Nishlocha Anoshim Lofaneinu, we request that you send some spies to go ahead, right, to spy the land, to send Meraglim. Omru Lahem, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, Loma, why? Why do you need spies for? So does Chazal. There was a dialogue. It wasn't just immediately they decided and then they sent out spies. Rather, Yalkut Shemoni tells us, in fact, that there was a dialogue. So Dalai Lama Moshe Rabbeinu was interested in finding out, why do you want to send spies? What's the purpose of it? So it's a fascinating answer, a most unfamiliar type of an answer, even though we've heard the Maase of the Meraglim hundreds of times. Every year, certainly, we go through Parsha Shelach, and yet you always find out something new. And here, the Yalkut Shemoni, you find a fascinating thing. The answer of the Meraglim seemed to be that they were mechavim l'shem shemayim, totally something that we may not have been aware of. What did they answer? Listen to what they answered. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu as follows. Because Rav Dessler points out here in the brackets, if you see here, Moshe Rabbeinu asked appropriately, why need Meraglim for? Because before the chet of the Meraglim, right, they were on a high madrega, they understood there's no need to do this ishtadlus. Because Baruch Hu said, go into Eretz Yisrael and conquer the land, right? That generation understood there was no need to send Jewish tablets to send Meraglim. You know, this is in the world of Umas Olam. In the world, in the general world, in the regular natural world, this is the way countries do, right? Before they go to war, they send out spies. Each country spies on the other. But when Kadosh Baruch Hu himself, right, promised that Yisrael, to Klal Yisrael, certainly the Dor HaMidbar, the Dor that received the Torah, there was no need. They were on the Madrega, they understood. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, why do you need this tablets? Why do you need the spies for? Why do you need it for? And the answer came back, Omru Loi, so they said, totally different reason. It's not we want to send spies to find out the weakness, that's normally the usual reason to send spies, right? To find out the vulnerability of a nation that you intend to conquer. They didn't answer that. No, we don't need ishtadlis before we go to conquer, so we should need to send spies. They gave a totally different reason. Look at the reason that they gave. Omru Loi, they said as follows. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shekvar tichon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kerbach promised us, Shonu Nechnosen Leretz Kenan, V'yorishim Kol Tuv. If you remember, Rashi also brings it in Chumash, that Kerbach promised that we would go into Eretz Yisrael, it's not just conquer the land, we're going to find all kinds of treasures. We're going to find all kinds of treasures. V'harei Shomu Shonu Nechnosen. Now, the people of Canaan will have heard that we are about to enter. So you can imagine, what are they going to do? They're going to hide their treasures. They're going to hide their treasures, so let's play out. What could imagine happen? So now, if we're going to go into the land, yes, and successfully we're going to conquer the land, but we're not going to be able to find the treasure. So how will HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise come to fruition? Hashem promised that when we go into Eretz Yisrael, not only are we going to conquer the land, we're going to find the treasure, right? We're going to yarshin all the treasure. But the people of Canaan are going to hide the treasure, hearing that we're coming. And if so, how is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise? So we want to take up for the honor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they said. We want to take up for the honor of Kadosh Baruch Hu to be able, that Kadosh Baruch Hu should be able to keep his promise. So we're going to send spies to find out where the hidden treasure is before we come. So now when we come into the land, not only will conquer the land, but we'll receive all the treasure. So what did they do? The answer seems to be, on the outset, and Rav Detzel said they even believed it to a certain extent. They believed that they believed it. That they mean L'shem Shemayim. That the only reason they're sending spies, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise, right? She not turn out Chaz V'Shalom Achil Hashem. Here HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised, you're going to Eretz Yisrael. You're going to Yashin all the treasures. And it's like, normally it's not going to happen. They're going to hide the treasures. How are we ever going to find it? So therefore, we want to send spies to be able to see where the treasures are hidden. So now Hashem's promise will be fulfilled. That's a Gevaldik answer. The only reason they want to send spies is why? To be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. Because Baruch's promise should be fulfilled. That's how the Medrash brings out the answer why they want Meraglim. Let's take a look. Because Baruch was Matiach Shonu Nechnos L'Eretz Kanaan V'Yarishim Kol Toiv. V'Arishomu, the people of Kanaan heard Shonu Nechnosim. Im Matminim Heimis M'moinom, if they're going to go hide all the money, V'Lenim Tzeklum. We're not going to find anything. It'll seem HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not keep his promise. Now how's that going to look like? Right? Therefore, so the Yidden said, let the spies go. In other words, to find the hiding places. So let's understand. Were they lying? Was this a true motive? Or really, was it something else totally different? We see at the end what happened with the Meraglim. So at the time when they offered this explanation, what was the true motive? Says Rav Dessler, you have to analyze to realize who the Meraglim were. They were not pushing the people. So let's understand. So what happened over here? Rav Dessler explains as follows. This Bayne no. This Bayne means, let's consider for a moment. This was the Dor Deo, means this was the generation of knowledge. Means Dor Deo means this were people, great tzaddikim. This is the people of the highest madrege. V'loy bekal hoyotoyim. In other words, these people, he said, would not deliberately, right? Certainly would not deliberately attempt to deceive, right? And would not be easily to make a mistake. It would not be easy for such people on such a high madrega to make a mistake either. And yet, v'afal pikein choshvu bedato, right? And yet, what do we find out? Nevertheless, they genuinely believed, shekol chefsom, that their sole objective in sending Meraglim, the Shalom Rab, einoy elo l'man kiddush Hashem. Right? That's what they seem to genuinely believe. That was the purpose. They believed the reason that, right, that they're requesting to send Meraglim is only because of Kiddush Hashem. Hashem's promise should be able to be kept. We're talking about a generation that received the Torah HaSinai. Again, not simple people. Says Rav Dessler, look what happened. The Dor Mekabla HaTorah im kol oitzem havanosom. But in all in us, with the tremendous power of their understanding, high madrega, people had tremendous havona. Loi omdu al toizu. It means to say they were not able to discover the error that lay behind their rationalization. Now, Rav Dessler said that was not the true reason. They believed that this is the true reason. But there was something, a deeper subconscious motivation that they themselves made a mistake and did not detect. On the surface, what came out, the rationalization, because they wanted to send spies, so on the surface what came out is Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And as great as they were, the generation of Mekabel HaTorah, they themselves were not able to discern, to detect the error in their rationalization, that this is not really their Kavana. They believed that this was their Kavana. They themselves did not realize it. Ad kidekach, so subtle is the mistake, meaning that they did not realize what the true kavana was, that even Moshe Rabbeinu was not able to detect it. In spite of the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, says Rav Dessler, B'Shem Dezoyer, was even able to read Chochmas HaParzuf. Moshe Rabbeinu, looking at the face of a person, was able to right away read the character of a person. There's something, as we know, called Chochmas HaParzuf. Certain Balaam and Kabbalim claim they know Chochmas HaParzuf. Baruch Hu, you know, so there's something called Chochmas HaParzuf. Were you able, Pasha, to know the panemius of a person? What's on his face? By the way, they say, why is the face called Ponim? You know why? Ponim is a Lashon Pnim, the panemius. Because whatever inside is read on the face.
The face reads the inside. You have to know how to read it, though. You have to learn the language. So the face is called ponim. Why ponim? Because the face reflects inside. So you have to know chokhmas aparzuf. Moshe Rabbeinu knew chokhmas aparzuf. And yet he himself, when they gave the answer to Moshe Rabbeinu why they want to send Meraglim, it was for the sake of Kiddushim Shemaim. Moshe Rabbeinu believed that they meant Kiddushim Shemaim. Because the real reason, the real motivation, which was totally for a different reason, was so deeply recessed in their psyche, right, that they were not able to Meraglim themselves, did not even realize it. Didn't realize the true reason for the motivation, and Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able to detect it. And yet, that error in the rationalization brought the whole downfall. You see what happened? They were not able to discern the real truth. They were not capable, not they were not capable, they didn't realize to really define the pinpoint, the real truth. Let's take a look. He says as follows. He's the door again, the door Mekabla Torah, the door Mekabla Torah that they were. Im kol oitzem havanosom. With all their tremendous power of understanding, talking about the Meraglim and the Eden, with all their power of understanding, they were not able, right? They were not able to grasp the mistake that lay behind their thinking. And even Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able to grasp that their intention was not L'Shem Shemayim. A person can fool himself thinking that he means L'Shem Shemayim. I mean, you have somebody that's b'chlal an imposter. He says, I'm doing L'Shem Shemayim, which is not true. He knows not. You can have a situation where a person believes he's doing L'Shem Shemayim, and it's not L'Shem Shemayim. He thinks he's doing L'Shem Shemayim, but it's really not L'Shem Shemayim. There's something deeper that's motivating him. You know, as the Sasema said, it says, V'chol ma'asecho, says in Pirkei Avos, whatever you do, you're L'Shem Shemayim. We have a klal, kol comes to be marba, comes to add. V'chol ma'asecho. What's the call coming to add? It says, call Masecha, all your Maisim. What's it coming to add? So Sasema said, your L'Shem Shemayim should also be L'Shem Shemayim. Your L'Shem Shemayim itself should be. Call Masecha, your L'Shem Shemayim. Your L'Shem Shemayim should also be L'Shem Shemayim. Your L'Shem Shemayim should not be for a different reason. Chtir L'Shem Shemayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu himself, he says, Boitzim Chachmosoi. I left out something. So Moshe Rabbeinu, Yochel Amid, B'zeh Shein Kavanos M'Shem Shemayim. Mamish. They say Mamish, because I'm not saying. There was a chelik of it, maybe, yeah? But there's something much more deep-rooted. That was deep down. As we see that the Masik B'Yalkut Shom, what does the Yalkut conclude when Moshe Rabbeinu heard the answer? Oh, L'Shem Shemayim. So what does the Yalkut say? Ki Moshe Shoma. Moshe. When Moshe heard their answer, oh, give all the answer. They want to send Meraglim. L'Shem Shemayim. That Kadosh Baruch Hu should be able to keep his promise. Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu heard it. Nilkat B'Yodom. He fell into the trap. Nilkat. Moshe Rabbeinu himself fell into the trap. Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, yeah, it seems very good what they said. I agree, it seemed good in my eyes. Whatever they said seemed good in my eyes. So Moshe Rabbeinu himself fell into the trap. Says Rav Dessler, you know what Moshe Rabbeinu's koyach was? You know what it means when we say Moshe Rabbeinu fell in the trap? You have a havimin, you have a sogin, the power of a Moshe Rabbeinu to recognize the truth of a human being. Listen to the power of Moshe Rabbeinu. Look at the ability of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, with his great wisdom, Moshe Rabbeinu basically had the ability to see a person through the X-ray vision, right? But X-ray vision, not to see just the physical. X-ray vision to see, right? To see the neshama of a person. To see a person's motivation. To see what's going on. To see what makes them tick. Was able to see into the psyche of a person. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to look and to discern b'toich toichoi al pi kol tzedode koiches nafshoi. He was able to see through all aspects of a person's psyche. Koich of Moshe Rabbeinu. Afil atmunim b'yoser. Even those facets that are hidden so deeply hidden. Moshe Rabbeinu had the tremendous power of seeing right through a person, to recognize the koiches hanefesh of a person. To recognize, we say, every aspect of a person's thinking and psyche. Kamash Yekosov, the Pesach says, if you remember, when Yisro gave the Eser to Moshe Rabbeinu, that he should appoint, right, many, many other dayonim. But to appoint dayonim, right, there was a requirement. It was supposed to say, Vato Serze, right, make sure that you seek out, right, Anche, right, what is it, Anche Emes, there should be Yirei Hashem, Soine Botza. So, what do you mean? Right, they should be people which are men of character. They should be people who are Yir Shemayim, and men of truth. Right, so the boss are people who hate gain, who hate money. How do you know who's Yir Shemayim? Who's supposed to know? How do you know who's Yir Shemayim? How do you know who's Yir Shemayim? A lot of things you can tell. let's say. But how do you know Yerushimayim? Yerushimayim is something very, very personal. The answer is because Moshe, that was the koyach of Moshe Rabbeinu. An average person can't. Even above average person can. Come out, nobody could. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one. Moshe Rabbeinu had the power to be able to look at a person and to size them up through and through. He had that power. So Moshe Rabbeinu had that power to receive after Sechze Mikolom. Chazal and Chazal say, on Moshe Rabbeinu, Chazal say, Shehimchin al pichokmas ha-partsuf. Chazal say that he had the ability, right, to recognize the character of a person al pichokmas ha-partsuf through the power of reading a person's character off his face. The Kvarkoz v'harba b'zeh b'zoya. And the Zohar deals a great deal about this feature, about this aspect, chokhmas ha-partsuf. And besides that, he says, the gamzul hazeh, he says, even without that, he says, it's partially the self-evident that Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, at kama higia chokhmas Moshe b'koiches ha-nefesh. It's partially, he says, that Moshe Rabbeinu tremendously reached very high in understanding human character. Become a lomad mahavanosom, and Moshe Rabbeinu learned so much in the process of his own tremendous right upward in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu kept growing and growing. At the same time, he also, at the same time, grew in his ability of understanding human character, as he points out. So, with all of those tremendous, tremendous powers of Moshe Rabbeinu, he himself did not recognize the deep, deep recessed motivation in the Meraglim. Which they themselves, right, fool themselves. And because Rav Dessler points out, he says, you have to understand, he said, you have to understand, it's much easier to see somebody else's mistake than your own. Notice, it's easier for the Meraglim to make a mistake on their own thinking, but it should be, right? Moshe Rabbeinu should be able to notice, because the flaw of somebody else is much easier to recognize than your own. So Moshe Rabbeinu should have been able to recognize. And yet he didn't. He was not able to recognize. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was caught up in the trap. So what's the answer to that? What's the answer? Vachri Kolele says, Loyomad al Tehusam Shal Yisroel. Echef Shadovazeh. How's it possible? How's it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu, with this tremendous talent, with this tremendous feature, of being able to read right through a person, even to find out that which is most hidden, 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 how come he's not able to recognize or to read the true motive of the Meraglim? Al Korchenu, we must say, says Rav Dessler, because the mistake, even by the Meraglim, was so ever so slight. It was ever so slight. Shatoy so Sadaka Kol Kach, it was a, such a slight situation. He says, Shafila Moshe Rabbeinu Lohoye Yochala Hagishbo. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able to discern that. Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able to discern that. And therefore we find Hashem did not hold Moshe responsible for the Meraglim, only the Bnei Yisrael themselves. Only the Bnei Yisrael themselves. Ad kadei kach. So, he goes on to point out, he says, even more, he says, the feature of a Moshe Rabbeinu, to be able to read right through a person, he brings down from the Vilna Goyim. He says something very interesting. He says, the Goyen writes, the Groa writes in Sefer Deres Eliyahu, that Yidin used to come all the time to ask Eitzes for Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, Rambam tells us in Parshas Yisroel, right? Kibo Elai, the people come to me. Rambam said that they came for many things. They come for asking Shilas. They come maybe for Din Toiris. They also come if they have a Choyla that Moshe Rabbeinu should be mispawel. By the way, Rambam writes, it seems that this is the source of writing a Kritl. Rambam talks about the names of the name being misspelled for the names of the various people, you know, who came, that they need a Yeshua, they need a Brocha, and so on and so forth, writes the Rambam. The Goyen said, Yidden will also come to Moshe Rabbeinu to ask Eitzes and Avodas Hashem. Eitzes and Avodas Hashem, how can I grow spiritually? Not just asking a Shaila, Kosher, Trefa, Milchik, Spleishik, this kind of, he came to ask, Poshet, how can I grow spiritually? And the truth is, not every person has the same answer, should get the same answer. Because based upon a person's ability, based upon the person's disyoinus, based upon a person's standing in life, there are different answers tailor-made to that person. So the Goyen said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you'll soon see how, but Moshe Rabbeinu was able to give each individual person his own personal instructions. Instructions for one was not necessarily instructions for somebody else. What worked for one would not necessarily work for somebody else. Look what the Goyen says. The guy said, "There is a Leo." He says in Parshas Devarim, "Shabayim Yisrael al Moshe Lishol Kolechon al Avodas Hashem Aprotishloi." They would come to ask on their personal situation, and says the guy, "Moshe Imalamdom Ha'etzes Vadrochim." Moshe would teach him the Etzes Vadrochim. L'chol Echad, each one binyone Aproti, right? Moshe would advise each one on a particular path, right? A special path, Al Pi Hashem, which means Moshe Rabbeinu got it directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, so it can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, it was almost like a prophecy each time. Harei, we see from here, Ki Gam B'Chochma Yoyse Gedoylo. So you see from here that it can be, no matter how wise Moshe Rabbeinu was, you still needed Al Pi Hashem, you still needed the Sati D'Shemaya, that Hashem should give you particular information, to give a particular information, right? To be able to go into the dakus, to go into the depth of a person's human character, it's only Al Pi Hashem, as he points out, B'Nevuah Bitter Lahem. So he points out, and we're going to just stop here, go here to the bottom. So, Rabbi Yisai, if the mistake was so slight that even Moshe Rabbeinu could not find it, so why were the Meraglim and the Yidden held accountable? Look on the bottom. Umaton is boyinin. So now let's understand. If Moshe Rabbeinu all of Asholim nitvis al tozu, if Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able, right? If Moshe Rabbeinu himself was not able, was not held accountable, right? To be able to discover this mistake of the Meraglim, heich nitvul al Yisrael. Then the question is, how come the Yidden themselves were held responsible? So here, says Rav Dessler, we derive a great lesson. So what's the answer? The answer is that even a mistake that's so slight that Moshe Rabbeinu himself is unable to discern it in others, right? But it can be seen by the person affected. Maybe Moshe couldn't see it in them, but the person who is affected, Hashem does give the ability of the individual himself to be able to see it. Look what he says. Afilo toiz gol kedusha yuchal argishoy Moshe Rabbeinu al acherim, but heim ba'atzmam yichalim laroisa. But Hashem gives the individual himself who is being affected. So it might be such a slight, right? Deep mistake, deep. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't discern it. But the person himself, to whom it's nageh, if he only wants to find the truth, if he's really looking for the truth, the person who's really affected is truly able to find it by applying again his own truth perspective, he says. Im ach yirtzu, right? Only if they really want to find it. And the punishment for that came, as we know, that brought Tisha B'Av. This brought, of course, right, this brought the weeping for the generations, right, which was really in essence a failure to see the mistake in themselves. So, but there's the good news too. The fact they were punished means what? That it's something that is doable. If it wouldn't be doable, it wouldn't be punished. So there's a great consolation here for every human being. But it shows a what? That if you really summon all your forces, right, l'srak ez aloem is l'dalik bo. What you have to do is summon your forces and to concentrate on the truth and identify with the truth completely, right? Then it would be impossible for the Yitzhahara l'hatoysay b'shumponim would not be able to lead them astray. So this is again another way of understanding Rabbi Yisai. Again, human behavior, human understanding. And the bottom line is that if a human being really wants to, is able to go deep and find, right, what is the real truth, what behind the motivations of his actions. And that is really expected of each person. Let's take a look at the tzetel, Rabbi Yisai, the sheet a little bit, to show you how a person can be fooled, thinking that he believes something. As we said, he believes that he believes something, but deep down there's something else totally that motivates him to thinking that he believes what he believes. This is a very well-known shmuz that Reb Chaim Shmulevitch gave him Miri Yeshiva, many years ago. It's from the Sefer Sichas Musar. And you take a look, he quotes the following Gemara. Let's do it very quickly. He says, okay, and Zay says, on a moitzim be Gemara Gittin, daf mem hei. It's a Gemara Gittin, a well-known little story. There's a great person by the name of Rav Ilish. Rav Ilish was, of course, an Amoira, a great Talmud Chacham, and he was kidnapped. The Gemara tells us, Rav Ilish ishtaboy, Rav Ilish was kidnapped. So he's sitting there in jail. So Yom Echad, one day, Have Yosef Gabed the High Gavra. He was sitting next to a person. Not as there's somebody else in jail. There was a companion in jail. So a village was sitting next to a person. Have Yode Belishne the Tzipori. This person had a tremendous talent. He was able to understand bird language. He was able to understand bird language. So Melech, we know, had that ability. The whole story, they heard the two birds, the wife bird speaking, the husband bird boasting to the wife bird, that whole story that the Medrash brings there. So Melech had the ability. The Gemara talks about it also in Masechta Sukkah, but Rabbi Yochanan was a book in Sichas Oifis and Sichas Bekolim, in all these type of situations. So here the Gemara tells us that the person sitting next to Rav Ilish there in captivity was a Baki in bird language. So also Urva, so there was a raven. There was a raven that flew by, a raven bearing a message. There was a raven that flew by, right, and made a sound, called out. So Omar Lei, so Rav Ilish says to the person, being that the person knows bird language, so Rav Ilish asked the person, what does the raven say? What's the bird saying? Omar Lei, so Rav Ilish said, Mike Omar, what is the bird saying? Omar Lei, so the person said, you know what he's saying? He's saying, Ilish barach, Ilish barach. Ilish, run away, there's an opportunity now to escape. Escape, escape. Now, if it's a mistake and he escapes, you know, who knows, the punishment could be even death. Escape is a good idea if you make it. But if you lose, if you fail, then it's better not to escape. So here, can you trust the bird, by the way? the bird is saying, this is what the man said to Rav Ilish. The bird is saying, Ilish barach, Ilish barach. You have an opportunity to escape, you have an opportunity to escape. Omar said, Rav Ilish, he says, Urvish shikrahu. The raven is a liar, he says. He says, voice of Michnale, I'm not relying on what the raven is saying. In other words, I'm not going to attempt to escape. But then a dove came. A dove. A yoina. Yoina is a kosher bird, right? Not only is it a kosher bird, but you know, Klal Yisrael is compared to the dove, to the yoina. So also yoina v'kokari. A yoina came and also made a noise, bore a message. So here again, Rav Ilish asked the person next to him, he says, what's the yoina saying? So he says, my comrade, Omalai said, Ilish barach, the same thing. The yoina is saying, Ilish, run off. Ah. Omar says, Rav Ilish, Knesset Yisrael ki yoina matilo. Knesset was compared to a yoina, which means the yoina tells the truth. So Shemama, this is a raya, Misrachish li nisa, this is a raya that in fact the Knesset is going to happen, and kachav. Interesting, when the birds came, when the raven came, he didn't trust the raven. He said, raven is a shakran, you can't trust the raven. But when the yoina came, he dropped. Okay, looking at this story, you see, here came a bird came. Every time a bird came and said something, Rav Ilish asked the person next to him, right? What is the bird saying? So I'm going to ask you a question. Was Rav Ilish a Baki in bird language? Did he know bird language or did he not know bird language? What does it seem from the story? So it seems that he did not know. Why? Because every time he asked the person next to him, if he himself knew it, he didn't ask the person. He heard what the bird is saying. And yet, look at Rabbi Kiveger brings down. On the side of the Gemara, Uperish Agoin Rabbi Kiveger, Begil Nin Hashas, Rabbi Kiveger there says, Be'oruch, says the Oruch was Rabbi Chil Bar Nosam. Interesting, the Oruch was a Rishon, was an early Rishon who lived in Rome. The Oruch, Hevi Mesug Yezu, the Oruch brings a raya from this Sugya, that Rav Ilish, Yoda Siche Soifis, Hesta Maise, just the opposite. The Oruch says, oh, from this Gemara we see that Rav Ilish knew the speech of birds, he knew the language of birds. So Rabbi Kiveger, they already asked on him, Smasher is just the opposite. The opposite. Every time the bird came, you had to ask the person next to him. So how do you explain the Oruch? How do you explain the Oruch? The Oruch says from this sugya we see that Rav Ilish did know. Doesn't it? Seems he didn't know. Look how Reb Chaim explains it. There's a tremendous shayrish of Musar message that comes out of here. It's a fascinating words of Reb Chaim. So Reb Chaim as follows. Explain the difficult words of the Oruch. Again, the Oruch says that from this sugya we see Rav Ilish was a Baki in Sicha Soifis. It seems the opposite. Dere, the Hine Hamashah Hikshasham. The Mashah asks the question, the Kishem Shlehemin Rav Ilish Le'oirev. The same way their village didn't believe the. Remember when the raven came? When the raven came and said, right? Ilish Barach, you can escape. He didn't believe the Oirev. Why did he not believe the Oirev? He said the Oirev is a Shakran. Why did he believe the other guy? The other guy was a Goy, was not a Yid. So why did he believe the other guy? The same way he didn't believe the birds, he shouldn't believe the other guy either. When the other guy said, you know what the bird is saying? He wants the village to get into trouble. Well, get into trouble. The Mashah asked the question. The Mashah said the same way that the village didn't want to believe the bird when the bird said Ilish Barach. That's what it appears like. So says Reb Chaim, he says, I believe that the Oruch had the same question. The Oruch had the same question. The Oruch had the same question. Valkain hevi raya. Definitely brought a raya. Rav Ilish be'atzmoi hoyedei lishatzpoi. The truth is, Rav Ilish himself knew and understood what the bird is saying. So if Rav Ilish himself knew, then the question is, why did he ask? Chaim says, I'm ready to gazach. Because when a person's in trouble, he hears what he wants to hear. Rav Ilish Take understands bird language, but he was worried maybe he's misinterpreting what the bird is saying because he's a negeya bedover. He wants more than anything, he wants to be free. So he merely asked the goy, he wasn't relying on the goy. He really wants to know if the goy confirms what he's hearing himself. That's a riot that Rav Ilish himself knew bird language, because otherwise he wouldn't rely on the goy. Because if he doesn't rely on the oirev, why should he rely on the goy? Why is the goy zukt mehr emes wie der goy? Forget the oyer, but zukt mehr emes wie der goy. So why is he relying on the goy? The ethics of Rav Ilyish, so the oyer come to the conclusion, says Rav Chaim, that Rav Ilyish himself knew what the bird was saying. But a person should be concerned, maybe he hears what he wants to hear. That's the idea. My person I gave it over. So he asked merely the goy to see what is the bird saying. The goy merely confirmed what Rav Ilyish knew himself. Take a look. Well, Masha Shoyl Rav Ilyish, he said. The reason Rav Ilyish asked is high gavra. He asked that person, my koma, pihum ishim shechosha this atzmoy, Rav Ilyish was choshed himself. Shemesh meya bo'oznoy mashiliboy chofes lishmoya. Maybe he's hearing that which he wants to hear. Therefore, he asked this person. So if the goy is merely saying the same thing, you know that it's true what he's hearing. Right? Mamela comes out very good. So here's again, this is what Rav Dessler is saying. Rav Dessler said it many times. A person sometimes believes that this is motivation, right? And he thinks he believes it. He believes that he believes it, but if you go deeper down, it's very possible he only hears, right, that which he wants to hear, and sometimes he only believes that which he wants to believe. And therefore a person really has to go deep down, he says, and we try to concentrate to find out really what the emphatic truth is, deep down, which sometimes he's not able to recognize it on the surface, but he has to dig down deeply to find out the true motivation, and the emes. He thinks it's L'shem Shemayim. He liked to believe he means L'shem Shemayim. But deeper down, there's a totally different motivation like we found by the Meraglim. Beautiful little story. Let's end over here with the Shach. Well-known story, Noinon HaYeshivas. The Shach, of course, one of the greatest poskim of all time. Anybody who learns Yerideya, you know the Shach. The Shach and Yerideya, the Shach and Choshe Mishpat. You know, the whole Shach, Rabbi Isai, only made it to something like age 40. It's kamat impossible to understand how this young age Shach was able to be mechaber all these tremendous, tremendous svarim. It's not just how to be able, but he was recognized at that young age. By 40, he already was finished. So he wrote already in his 20s, in his 30s. You understand? He wrote other things as well. There's a sefer called Tokfei Koyim, a whole sefer on the sugi of Tokfei Koyim. And the Chidor writes that the Shach wrote the entire sefer in 1 month. And the Chidor writes, how a person is able to be mechaber this entire sefer, that particular sefer, Tokfei Koyim, a very intricate sugya, deep sugya. He did it in 1 month, the whole sefer. Anyway, Hagoyin Reb Shabbos HaKoyin, that was his name, Reb Shabbos HaKoyin. Right? Reb Shabbos HaKoyin, mechaber of the sefer, Sif Sekoyin, al Yodei B'choshim Eshvet, Nikla L'sichso bin Yenomominis Temechot Menechbode Vilne, Ashlehikar Klaus HaShach. He got involved in a dintayra, the Shach himself got involved in a dintayra with the Choshev Yid in Vilna. The person didn't know who the Shach was, right? The person didn't know who the Shach was, and involved with a dintayra. So they go to a Roth, they should pass in the Shaila. Who did they go to? Nosnei Neyem, he says, Rav Avram Abba, who is the Rabbi of Nevardik, going back, realizing how many years ago, going to Nevardik, going back many, because 4 or 5 centuries ago, yeah, going back to Nevardik. But Yom Mohem, that person, Rav Avram Abba, was Mefursim Kigoyim Vitzadik, Shehu Yivsek Viachriya Imiyat Tzedek. So they went to this Odom Godel, that he should pass him who's right. Is the Shach right? Or is the Balbus right? Right? So Lifnei Sheyotze L'derech, before they went out on the road, in other words, to ask for the dintayra, Ovar Rav Shabsi Balashach, so the Shach, you know, who knows better than the Shach, he went over the whole sugya. All of the sugyas related to this dintayra. He himself went over it. The Talmud, the Piskei Halacha, the Rambam, the Tur, the Shulchan Aruch, right? All the areas in Halacha that has a Shaychus to the Shaila, who better than the Shach, right? Who better than the Shach is able to command, right, and to absorb it appropriately, right? Ubolidei Hakore, and the Shach came to conclusion that he's right. He didn't paskin it, but in his own mind, he went through all the sugyas, Choshev Mishpat, right, and the Rambam and the Tur, Shulchan Aruch, and he came out. He says that based upon black and white, he met all the sugyas. I'm right in the Sichsech. Oh, okay, but you're going to the Dintayra. You can't pass them yourself. So, B'yoyim HaMishpot, it came the day of the Dintayra. Shot Chushnef, so then they both laid out their tainus. They both presented their tainus. As Tanisayim, lived in Rav Rom Abba, in front of Rav Rom Abba, who was the Dayan. Yorad Harav L'Torch Umke Shel Aloche. So the Rav really, right, went through the sugya himself. He heard the tainus. V'hoitzi Es Psagdinoi L'Chayev Es Hashach. Listen to this. And he paskin that the Shach is chayiv, the Shach is not right, and the Babos is right. Well, Zako says that Sad Shegeneged Hashach. The Shach was stunned. Hashach nidhem is stunned. The Shmoyev Sagdim, Shalafidatoi, because according to the Shach's opinion, and believe me, the Shach was greater than, bigger than him. And the Shach, according to his opinion, I'm right, he's wrong. The Rav is wrong. The Rav Paskin wrong. So he asked the Rav, on what basis did you Paskin against me? No, the Rav said, a new Sefer just was printed, Shach and Choshe Mishpit. He sides with me. And the Shach looks in and says, right, he's right. He himself wrote it, but when it was negay to him, he didn't see it. It's unbelievable. He himself wrote the psak, which is really against him, but when he was the Baldin himself, he was involved with it, he did not remember what he wrote himself. Here's the short. Look at the last line. Kamigdoilim divra chachomim that said, Ein odem roye choy v'leyatsmoy. Hodem roye v'shemeya, mashalibu chofitz. What you want to hear, that's it. That's what it says.